It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
Yes. Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I'm a man! I'm 40!
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. The show is available as a podcast, and it is also available on iTunes. God knows why, but it is.
Thanks, Melissa.
And we're thankful for that. Yeah, thank you, Melissa. And happy birthday, Melissa Davis. Hope you're feeling better.
Is it her birthday today?
Yesterday.
Oh.
Yesterday. And actually, Mike Perry's birthday was yesterday as well.
My birthday was last Sunday.
Yes, and happy birthday again.
Thank you.
That's Kobe Slagle, the birthday boy, 23. And Sunday will be the last time. Well, after Sunday, I'll no longer be able to use the Mike Gundy rant because I'll be turning 41. Yeah, whatever. It's okay. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey@wfyi.org, SOCEY@wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook. Gina Wagner of the hauntedflowerreviews.com and fellow IFJA.
What's up?
What's up? Or as I always refer to the IFJA as the doughy white guys with glasses and Gina.
And Gina.
You're the Angina part of our group.
Well, that's how Scott Pilgrim made it onto our top 10.
We'll get to that in a little bit. And a filmmaker, Vinnie Mangonello, is sitting in with
us
today.
That's really close.
How you doing?
Good.
Thanks. Appreciate it. See, it's just like home. I'm ridiculed. That's really okay. I did think of you because I wanted to start the show off by saying, we're Film Sociology and we review movies. 1, 2, 3, 4. But
yes.
You don't have...
One, two, three, four.
And I also thought because last night was a Nuvo staff party, and we had a tree, and we had gifts that you could pull from under the tree. And what did I pull from under the tree? A DVD copy of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. So
that is an awesome gift.
It is an awesome gift.
Everyone should go get that.
Yes, because nobody saw it when it came out. Because,
please validate this choice.
And as you're going to hear on No Limits, the last Thursday of the month on WFYI at noon at 8 o'clock, I had Chris Lloyd and Ed Johnsonat on. And Ed just wanted me to remind you that if you didn't like Scott Pilgrim, it's because you're old. So take that for what that's worth.
It's in my Netflix queue. So
it's really wonderful fun. It's a lot of fun.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, we have a number of films opening because now is the time where we cram about 90% of all the Oscar contenders in a span of 3 weeks. And this week is no exception. Well, okay, one film is an exception. Two films are an exception. All right, they're coming, I can assure you. But we're going to start things off with the latest film from David O. Russell, The Fighter. And this stars Mark Wahlberg, a very skinny Christian Bale, and Amy Adams apparently put on Christian Bale's weight to play the role, and Melissa Leo and her hair, and yeah, it's a true story, but it doesn't matter if it's a true story or not, because I don't care if it's anything is based on a true story. Just give me a good story. But it's about two brothers, one who is a contending fighter and the other a former fighter, who's getting in trouble with all sorts of bad things, not including his mother and their six daughters. So anyway, here's some audio.
This is my younger brother.
You gotta help me finish this.
Taught him everything he knows.
You don't want to see where this fight is headed. Turn it over.
I'm still his trainer.
I have a fight next week.
And after I win, I'm gonna start making good money so you can live with me more days, okay?
Good luck, Daddy.
Don't hold your breath, Casey.
Bye, baby.
You pave streets, right?
Yeah, I do. And I'm a fighter.
I heard you were a stepping stone.
Oh, I mean, I had a few tough fights, but the next fight's gonna show who I am.
Yeah, and he's gonna lose that one, too. So move that sugar ass and give him
a... Don't disrespect her.
Mickey Ward is 31 years old. He's here because he needs the money.
Look at the size of that guy. He's got 20 pounds on me, Dickie.
You don't fight, nobody gets paid.
I'm quitting, Shelley. I'm done fighting. I don't need it anymore.
It's sad that you let them take it away from you.
I was embarrassed. I told everybody I was going to win that fight and get back on track. I'm sick of being a disappointment.
Look, Mick, nobody's got heart like you. You're a very talented fighter. I want to give you a real shot. Make one last run at this thing before it's too late.
What about my brother? He's taught me everything I know. I can't do it without him.
With all due respect, he's too much trouble.
Dickie, get on the ground right now!
He's a fighter! Break his hand!
Mick, I was doing it for you.
You did it for me? What, this? Do me a favor, don't do nothing for me no more, okay?
Ready for a title shot? Not a stepping stone anymore.
He's using you.
You can't beat me. You had a hard enough time being you, and that's why you're in here.
We're gonna train. They gotta go.
Why am I the problem? I'm his blood. I'm his family.
You're crazy.
I'm the one fighting. Not you. Not you. And not you. This is my shot at the title. I won't get another one after this.
Mickey has a chance to do something that I never did, and he needs me.
Okay. I'll see you in Mickey's corner.
This is your time. I had my plan and I blew it. You don't have to. You're Mickey Ward. You're Mickey Ward.
So yeah, I actually did play the clip, a trailer of the film, because the last Christian Bale film we had was Terminator Salvation. Of course, we just played The Rant, but we're not going to do that, and we're not going to play Mark Wahlberg Talks to Animals on SNL, and we're not going to play the Jimmy Fallon Boston sketch, even though The Fighter and The Town are both going to be talked about on today's show.
Say hello to your mother.
Yes, I had it. And thanks. You got to. Thank you, Vinny. You took care of that. That's
my
all.
Excellent accent.
Yeah, you're a Southie if there ever was one.
Wow.
You're an extra in the Depotted. this was for me, and this. Oh, but the other great David O. Russell clip is Lily Tomlin screaming at him because he's not a fun guy to work with apparently, unless you're Mark Wahlberg, George Clooney, not so much. But yes, this is David O. Russell, who gave us Spanking the Monkey, I Heart Huckabees, Three Kings, and now he has given us his version of the 40s kind of boxer B movie. Chris Lloyd had a great write up in his book about the setup, the Robert Ryan film directed by Robert Wise. But it seemed like the boxing picture and, according to Barton Fink, the wrestling picture were big to do's in the 40s. A lot of B movies about fighters, because it's real simple. You know, is he going to win? Is he going to persevere over, you know, all the obstacles in his life? And in the case of the Mark Wahlberg character, it's his family. You have Melissa Leo in her big hair and the six sisters, which Gina
have been beaten with ugly sticks.
Yes, you actually put that
ugly
in.
Sisters.
You actually put that in your review, and then
I know.
And the better punchline is
I found out they're the actual sisters.
That's good for you.
Oh.
But you know what? Actually, when I saw them, every time I saw them, I kept thinking of the line in Goodfellas where they all had bad skin and bad makeup. They looked like the women at the party for Lorraine Bracco, except for Ileana Douglas. Yeah, they're all there. And guys, don't you wish all small town barmaids look like Amy Adams?
So it would help, I suppose.
It would help, probably. But no, it's his version of the 40s rock. Everybody in it is rock solid. I know Christian Bale's going to get a lot of notice, obviously, because he lost not nearly as much weight as in The Machinist, but I think the line
a
heck of a lot. But he also described his character. The character says in the film, he's wiry as bleep, and that's kind of one of those performances. He's just jittery and twitchy, and that's the thing that Oscar voters love to see. And he hasn't been nominated yet, so he's kind of due for that. But it's rock solid performances across the board, with Amy Adams and Melissa Leo and Mark Wahlberg. And, you know, Wahlberg's fine. I mean, he's got a lot to bounce off of in this film. And it seems like it helps if he has it's almost like Tom Cruise in the 80s. There was that period where Tom Cruise could only act well when he was bouncing off somebody like Paul Newman or Dustin Hoffman or, strangely enough, Robert Duvall, even though Days of Thunder is god-awful. But in the case of this, you know, this isn't Max Payne. This isn't Planet of the Apes. He's got some, you know, one, he's got a really good script by David O. Russell to work with, and he's bouncing off Christian Bale, Amy Adams, and Melissa Leo. That's not bad company at all.
Yeah, usually so many times I can't get behind Mark Wahlberg, and it's probably because I've been jaded about him ever since I saw Fear. I haven't been able to get that one out of my head.
You mean how he's trying to get into the bleeping house?
Yeah. That he's creeped me out so much from that movie that I have a hard time watching him in other movies. But this is probably the best movie I've seen him in. I really liked him in this.
You met her in Boogie Nights?
Well, I don't think I saw that.
Oh.
Yeah, Boogie Nights is fantastic.
It is. You go check it out. Because that was his kind of... you know, bleep you, yeah, I can act. Well, it also helps that it's Paul Thomas Anderson working with him on that as opposed to the bad James Foley thriller that you mentioned or Renaissance Man. Ugh. So did you enjoy the film as well?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I mean, I'm a sucker for the, you know, guy with all these obstacles, fighting the good fight, eventually making his way through. And, oh, gosh, I love those stories. I just do. And when it's well done like this was, then it's just a treat to watch.
Yeah, and the boxing stuff, just so folks know, it's not Raging Bull, it's because the film is set in the late 80s, it's interesting that Russell was able to capture the HBO boxing look. If for those who've watched boxing on HBO, especially at that time, the videography look of it, the video cameras and the fight scenes, I mean, they're very impressive.
Yeah, it looked like it came directly off of that.
Yes.
It was really cool.
Well, that and, you know, endless Whitesnake being played. Probably.
Yeah.
You know, David Coverdale will eat this week. That's fine. No, I'm kidding.
The boxing segments look different. They have like a shot in video and the rest of the film isn't?
Something like that. Yeah, I think Russell's handheld a lot of this, at least. But it's not a Bourne film. You don't need Dramamine to watch this.
But there's a lot of great suspense in the fighting scenes because they went on so long. Or you're just like, please hit someone, please.
Yeah, and it's not slowed down. It's not stylized. Like I said, I mean, the only stylized thing is I think the cinematography as opposed to editing and whatnot. I mean, it's not a bloodbath.
Is it realistic boxing like you'd see on TV as opposed to like Rocky where the guy's taking 15 haymakers? And... I mean, if boxing looked like that, I'd watch it all the time. But
that's what MMA is for.
Okay.
And kickboxing, as we all know, is the future, says John Cusack.
Okay.
Who do you think I was saying?
I don't know. I was going to say, says who?
Says who? Said John Cusack and say anything. And I'm not adding that to your account. You don't need to see that.
Okay. Oh,
it's really okay.
No boombox.
No. I'm very happy for Peter Gabriel. That's about it. So I had one problem, though. I was the only one in the group that this was bothered by. And there's a plot point where Wahlberg's character wins a fight by doing a classic rope-a-dope. And that's, you know, wearing the opponent out of punches and then just, boom, knocking him out flat. And, you know, this is 1989, and the promoter who goes and delivers a plot point to Wahlberg's character says, I haven't seen a move like that in 30 years. So this promoter never saw Ali fight Foreman and Zaire, where he mastered rope-a-dope. But I complained, and none of my fellow IFJs really responded or cared.
Sorry.
So. No, it's cool all right. Enough. It's all right. I wondered, you know what? And then I started thinking, if you remember the ATM line in No Country for Old Men, we're like, wait a minute, did they have ATM machines at this time this film was being, you know, supposedly set in? And, you know, was this the Coen brothers' way of messing with you to see if you're paying attention? I'm not going to rely on that David O. Russell's just messing with me. So.
Okay.
Thank you for nodding. That's all right.
The Rumble in the Jungle was a landmark.
It was, and a great documentary, When We Were Kings, which I should maybe add to your account, Mr. Slagle, someday. You don't have enough boxing documentaries in your queue.
I do not.
No.
I don't have any.
We'll have to work on that.
Do you guys share queues?
No,
oh,
no, 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 no. In fact, I know.
I was gonna say that's adorable.
Yeah, I know. No, no. In fact, it's even though it's not on the rundown, Kobe. I think
we're gonna sneak it in.
I think if we have time, we'll do a segment of what is Kobe watching, which is a regular segment.
You'll learn all about it later.
We should get an underwriter for what is Kobe watching.
I can't wait.
I have to work on that. So anyway,
you took the good ones though. Well,
not yet, but
we'll talk about that later, yeah. Much later, over growlers. All right, so, but yeah, big time on The Fighter. Go see it. Excellent performances. It's not too bloody, and yeah, it's really weird hair, lady's hair. Sorry, sorry that that has to happen. And you know, Massachusetts is represented really well. Also in theaters, if you're not up for, you know, boxing, there is the British art film, and this time it's based on the graphic novel I haven't read. It's called Tamara Drew, and it's from director Stephen Frears, who's given us everything from Dangerous Liaisons to Cherie to Dirty Pretty Things, and it's one of those quaint little UK towns where everybody's eclectic and acerbic and intertwining stories, especially involving Gemma Arterton, hope I'm saying that right. And what she is up to lately.
How are you settling in?
It's paradise. Crap.
Did it sell?
Well, of course, my kind of books aren't about sales, so no.
His touch was like a cosmic yes.
Nadia, go to the pub and stay there. I'll come when I can.
Who are you talking to just then?
Marriage. Remind me never to try it.
You're just a sex object. No one would have you.
Sometimes wish I could get distracted.
Hello.
Who's that? That's Tamara Drew. Good God, what's happened to her?
She had a nose job, Dad. I love your new hooter.
It's not actually new, it's just smaller.
She's single, you know.
What'd you have to do to get a cup of tea around here?
Make it. Tea, sugar, fridge.
She's completely different.
I couldn't agree more.
He never grew up.
In his trousers.
This your house?
Yeah. Do you want to buy it?
No. I want something else.
Wait!
What does she see in that little boy?
Maybe she's trying to make you jealous. Or maybe she's just a bit kinky.
Do I get my treat?
You are so cheesy.
The real secret of being a writer is learning how to lie.
Even if I was the last man in the world, Tamara Drew wouldn't hurt me.
When can we do this again? To the muse. However you find her.
I didn't know they provided material too.
You talked about being a sucker, Gina, for the athlete movies where there's adversity and they overcome and
yes,
climb every mountain and other lyrics. I'm kind of a sucker for the quaint UK little quiet UK towns where everybody's eclectic. And I think it was part of it is because I was 13 when I saw the film Local Hero, which I highly recommend to everybody. And there's films like The Waking Ned Divine and The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain and some of those. So this has that feel, although you have a lot of intertwining stories, not quite Altman-esque, but better than Valentine's Day. And it's a bit of a darker ending. So I enjoyed spending time with these people, not just because of Gemma Arterton and her shorts and the fact
her
that
freckles.
And her freckles, which are all over the place. but she's the, well, as much as you can see in this film. But yeah, she
you
comes
to
back.
See a lot.
I know. I didn't want to leave him with everything.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, this was, and by the way, it's nice to see her in an art film because I know she was everyone's, basement-dwelling fantasy babe in Prince of Persia and Clash of the Titans. So now refined, creepy old guys can enjoy her as opposed to sci-fi fantasy fans and Quantum of Solace. But yeah, her character comes back to town and there's a love quadrangle, I think, a rectangle with the rock star.
It's
and
a mess.
Yeah, and the guy who she's sort of like. And I have a new that guy. I'm trying to remember his name now. And it's Roger Allam, who plays the writer who has the writer's retreat and is a serial adulterer and
yes,
very smarmy in his ways. And I remembered because he was the villain in Speed Racer, among other things.
Yeah.
He's that guy. Yeah, that guy. He was also in The Queen and V for Vendetta.
Yeah, V for Vendetta.
Yeah,
that's
so
what
that
I remember him from. He was so good in that.
Yeah, so and
TV
he
host.
What?
Yeah. A TV host.
Yeah, he just oozes smarmy charm, which he's supposed to in this film. So, and the wife who, well, she has a wonderful few moments, especially near the second half of the film, and not too bad a bludgeoning of the token American tourist. So that turned out to be a nice surprise.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed spending time with these folks. Gina, you saw this today. Thank you for seeing this.
I saw it today. I went to Keystone and saw it today with the afternoon crowd.
We'll get to them in a minute.
and I just have to say, I felt like really early on I could tell who was supposed to be with who by the end of the film.
Right.
And I just wanted them to hurry up and get there. Because some of them, I was becoming a little bit upset at that they were just letting things happen to them, or they're being kind of wimpy, except for the teenage girls who were a little bit too...
there's a good point. There's these two girls that have nothing to do, and they wind up doing things like breaking in the homes and throwing
things. They're so bored,
they're
like breaking and entering, throw things at cars. They're like, we're bored, so we can just do whatever we want. And everybody else is just like, oh, I don't know. I kind of want to approach the person, but I don't think I'm gonna. And maybe things are happening, but maybe I'll wait until next season, because it shows you each season on the screen.
That's right. But they don't play the four seasons. That would have been cliched.
Yeah. So I was just waiting. I'm waiting for the relationships to run their course and get to their conclusion.
So did you, it's interesting because with the girls early on, I wondered, oh, that's going to be annoying and irritating. But as time goes on, they wind up becoming more of a plot point than is expected, and kind of a nice payoff for them. Not nice in the, you know, everyday sense of the word, but
they got what they wanted.
They kind of got what they wanted in an odd way.
But the path to get there is so brutal.
Well, they're 13, I think.
15.
They're 15. What else are they going to? There's no straight lines when you're 15.
I just didn't have anything to do, I guess.
Okay, so no fun for you.
No, I mean, I like the setting, and I like seeing
it's
the
pretty.
Farms, I mean,
it looks pretty.
and Gemma, she's pretty. She's got freckles. But the rest of them, I don't know. I could get behind a few of the characters at moments. There were some really great delivered lines. Like, grow up, little drummer boy. That was my favorite line.
Yeah, the guy who, I can't remember who described it, but he looked like he had mascara tattooed onto his eyes. Great drummer, rock drummer. No, not really. So, okay. Well, this is what I thought of it.
Yes, 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 yes!
Now, I have to bring this up, because from time to time, especially when you have a film show Fridays at 5, we sometimes have a tendency to go to something first thing Friday morning or Friday afternoon. And, Castleton is used to us kind of running into seeing something. And you saw this, well, about 1 o'clock today?
Yep, at Keystone.
At Keystone on a Friday. So I will ask, were you the youngest person by, let me guess, 40 years?
Yes.
And, and there's, you made a point. You're saying it during the break.
Oh, during the movie, something happened that upset one of the viewers. And she was so mad that she, like, basically, like, spiked her popcorn bag onto the ground and went, huh! And I was just like, wow, you are really upset, aren't you?
Was this something that involved nudity?
No, this was about hurting an animal.
Oh, that moment, yeah. Even though there's a sign that says no animals were harmed in the making of this.
Oh, I'm sure, but...
That really upset her.
And while normally I don't like animals being hurt in a movie either, I felt like it was a natural plot line given everything that animal caused.
Okay.
Was Michael Vick in the film? Or?
No.
Oh, jeez. Oh. You know, his kids want a dog now.
Oh,
yeah. But
no.
I know. But he did serve his time, and he's taking the Eagles to the playoffs.
He can throw a football.
He can throw and run, for the most part. But anyway, I think there's a usual group of the usual suspects that show up to the movies no matter what's opening.
Yeah, I have no idea how they even found out about this movie.
Because it was at Castleton, and they go and they have lunch, and then, you know, in the dome, and then they come and they see something that looks interesting. Thus the pretty freckles.
They're like, freckles, I'll watch this movie.
That's right. So there.
That's what gets me most of the time.
Freckles?
No, Pam Grier gets me most of the time.
I know. Pam Grier
does.
Well,
she have freckles too?
You know what?
You know what? If there's a Blu-ray release of Coffee, we might find out. We've got to work on that.
I'm going to watch that tonight.
Are you?
Yeah.
Good for you. Oh, good for you. We had a bet, and And I won, and he had to watch a film of my choosing. But me being the nice guy host, I also gave him a consolation prize to watch. So he's watching Coffee. You're
Aww.
Welcome.
You guys have such a special relationship.
Yeah, I know. Let's move on. Speaking of special relationships, one of the great dad films, Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
Yes, Jeff Bridges has two films in 2 weeks. Good for him. But it's a sequel to the 1982 bomb becoming cult figure, becoming video game film Tron. And this time the son is looking for the dad because the dad's caught in a grid. That's about it. So here's the audio.
I promised you that if I ever got any information about your dad, I'd tell you first, right? I was paged last night. Came from your dad's office at the arcade.
So?
So? That number's been disconnected for 20 years. Two nights before he disappeared, he came to my house. He said he was about to change everything. Science, medicine, religion. He wouldn't have left that, Sam. He wouldn't have left you.
Alan, you're acting like I'm gonna find him sitting there working. Just, hey, kiddo, lost track of time.
Wouldn't that be something?
Not as loud as Inception.
That's true.
Pretty close.
We could have filled in bomb.
That's right. Did we do this joke last week?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we kind of do this joke every time we see each other.
Really?
Now.
Yeah. You know what? Because it's
that and the 1, 2, 3, 4. Those are our jokes.
You know what we haven't talked about in a while?
Inception.
No. Is Machete still cool?
Machete is still cool.
Okay.
And I just wanted to check up on
that. Christopher Lloyd, I think, was going to name that the worst film of the year until he saw Yogi Bear. I'm like, no.
Hit him with a glowing frisbee disc.
You will. And he'll turn into gold coins.
And then he turns into gold coins.
2,000 points.
Money.
Okay, we'll get to the other stuff.
Tron
Legacy. Okay, but first off, see it in 3D. See it in 3D, even better. This is shameless, but go see it at IMAX downtown.
That was really sweet. Guys,
yeah.
To see it there.
So and we were told by my source there, because I have sources everywhere. Ooh. They validate parking now downtown at the IMAX. So
I had thought
breaking
about.
Breaking news!
No,
right
seriously,
here.
they had not before. They had not before.
This just in.
This is what you get. Thoughtful information here, smart guy.
I'm going to go now.
We
watch movies, so you don't
see,
have
look,
to.
That's
we
right.
We converted someone. He's going.
That's right. So
parking the underground
well,
facility.
We're not finished with the review yet.
Oh.
But
we've already convinced him. We've done our job.
So they validate parking, and there's a concession special. It's not too bad. But, yeah, it looks impressive. I know we've been kind of griping about how certain 3D movies didn't need to be 3D at all, ever.
Yes.
This is not the case. And there's not a whole lot of gotcha stuff. It's really good scope, really good depth, and I mean it just looks really cool.
And
that being said,
another thing about the the IMAX theater downtown is that they've added to the atmosphere by putting like the Tron video game in the lobby right before you walk in.
Yeah, that's kind of
so
cool.
You can look at it and drool.
I wasted many quarters on that game back in 1982 and 83.
I think I remember the game better than the actual movie.
You know what? You kind of do. Chris Lloyd brought up the fact, and I hadn't watched it in a while, but he said all the cool stuff you remember, that's 5 minutes of the film. You know, the race and the identity disc and David Warner chewing scenery. That being said about this film, first off, it's over 2 hours. Doesn't need to be. 90 minutes if that. Because, you have Garrett Hedlund going through the grid and trying to find his dad. And there's Olivia Wilde. And there's not one, but two Jeff Bridges. There's old bearded, kind of a video game shaman. I don't want to say the dude because everybody calls him the dude.
He's a hippie.
He is a hippie. And then there's a young CGI created Bridges of making him look like Bridges from the late 80s, circa Jagged Edge. And that's always amusing to watch. And I was kind of surprised. I thought from looking at the trailers, I'm like, Bridges is going to be in this film for like 10 minutes. He'll be in like the very beginning and the very end. Not the case. So anyway, that being said, it's just, it takes itself so damn serious. And I wound up laughing at the film. I know some folks have, and some of the reviews have called it a bore and a letdown. I was cracking up at how serious this movie really wants to be. And there was also the, name the homage. There's elements of, Blade Runner and Star Wars and Logan's Run and all the ridiculous futuristic films of the 70s and 80s where, giant leather shoulder pads and, tight white outfits looking like glam rock bands. That's how the future was going to look.
And what you didn't like about it?
I enjoyed it, but for the wrong reasons. Okay. This isn't probably the most unintentionally funny film of the year that I can think of.
But this time they're going to change the world.
And it's your destiny.
This time, there's destiny. The world is going to be changed.
But there's no honor.
Well, no.
No hope. No faith. No. But there is destiny.
Yes.
So.
And I mean, the outfits, they've got the skin tight glowing outfits. What more do you want in a movie? You've got glowing discs.
Gemma Arterton and his, no.
You don't have freckles in this movie.
No freckles, you can't see it in this one. There's young Jeff Bridges screaming to the masses like Mussolini.
Oh yeah, he's like, my army.
Yeah, it's really, and special note, because I didn't know he was in this film, and he kind of comes out of nowhere and then goes away, Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
I love Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen.
He's
Michael
a Sheen stealer, isn't he?
Michael Sheen is so cool for so many reasons. All right, one, he's played Tony Blair not once but twice in two different films. He also played David Frost, and he's great in those films. But then he will also appear in Twilight and
yes,
Underworld and this film. And the only way I could describe Sheen in this film, he's a club owner. But he's kind of a combination of Ziggy Stardust and the white chocolate zero candy bars. Or Jeremy Irons as the albino thing from the future in the last version of The Time Machine. He's just out there, and he's just prancing around and spinning his cane. And like,
oh, yeah.
Who are you?
He's just dancing to the music. I love it when he refers to the DJs, and he's just like, hey, my Daft Punk DJs, play the music louder. We're at a club.
And
woo,
by the way,
club in the grid.
Music by Daft Punk.
Where it's cooler.
Cool.
But it's just out of nowhere. And he's not nearly in the film enough. I wish he was there the entire time just prancing and narrating and giving you more Daft Punk music. He just went full balls out. And there's something to be said about that, because I actually recommended Underworld only because of the scenes with Bill Nighy and him. Otherwise, skip it. Don't, move on ahead. So, there is some, I've talked before on the show how much I love crazy, classically trained Shakespearean actors who do that and then do ridiculous stuff like this.
Yeah, he's just here basically to have fun. And
boy, does he ever. And that really helps out, because this is just a mediocre film that's could have been shorter and could have been
kept hearing like Big Lebowski voice in my head every time I saw Jeff Bridges, the hippie version. Like,
yeah.
Oh, free software, man. Oh, you're really messing with my zen.
Yeah, he did
grid.
Say, you're messing with my zen, man.
I laughed so loud at that. I'm like, he actually went there.
He did go there. Why not? He's Jeff Bridges. What does he got to prove?
Ah.
And by the way, next week, no dude voice in True Grit. We can't talk about the film, but we can tell you that.
It's like a contest to see how many roles he can play this month.
Why not? All right, we are going to take a short break because we ran long. Wait a minute. Well, I guess we can keep this short. You did see How Do You Know?
Yes. Don't see it.
All right, let's take a short break. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe, I think because of time, we're going to skip the trailers on these, and we'll just actually talk about some of these pictures.
Okay.
We have a lot. Something that was brought up, Vinny, you brought it up before during the break. Yogi Bear opened this week, and Chris Lloyd saw it and dubbed it the worst film of the year. In fact, he had to resend his reviews of the best and worst of the year.
And that's got to be bad, because that would be stealing it from my opinion of Furry Vengeance.
That was your pick for the worst?
Yes.
Wow, you saw that. I didn't see that.
They tried to redeem it by having a dance number at the end.
No.
In really poor-fitting sweatpants.
Wow, that's a shame.
Yes.
However, I think a piece of good that might have come out of Yogi Bear.
There is?
There is. And I have to actually give props to the guy who directed the film Yogi Bear. I'm still not sure about the entire story on this. But the director of Yogi Bear made an alternate ending, which apparently he just made for YouTube. I don't know if this is going to be on the DVD. I seriously doubt it.
They should just tack it right on that.
They should. I agree. They should. But they shot an alternate ending, and the ending is shot exactly like the end of the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robin Ford, with Boo Boo shooting Yogi. I'm not making this up. Go online, check it out. Not right now, Kobe. We have a show to do. No, it is hysterical.
Oh,
and if you've seen, one, it's a funny thing in general, but two, if you've seen the assassination, because I think 9 of us saw it, the film, when it first came out in theaters, and that's a shame because it's a great film.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, 10. but no, it's hysterical. So that's your project over the weekend. Okay. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Well, we'll start with the other guys, the latest Will Ferrell, Adam McKay thing. And this time it's him and Mark Wahlberg. Wahlberg can do comedy. It's nice to see. Doesn't get a chance to do it, but...
He's good at having the temper.
Yeah, he does have a bit of a temper.
Yeah.
Because let's not forget, folks, that whole thing about SNL, he was acting. He wasn't really that angry. But this is a spoof of the buddy cop genre, and of course Will Ferrell is a desk jockey, a desk cop, and Mark Wahlberg wants to be out on the streets, and of course Ferrell doesn't, and there's Steve Coogan and Eva Mendes. Eva Mendes looks great, by the way. And
I knew you'd like her.
I know. It's very predictable. And, you know, very fun intro beginning with Dwayne Johnson and Samuel L. Jackson. Michael Keaton shows up.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
You know what?
I wanted to watch the rest of that movie.
Well, I don't know how much of that novelty would wear as far as that.
Come on.
So another 10 minutes, maybe.
They could have sold that for me.
Just make that movie?
Yeah, they could have done that for me, and I would have watched it. Yeah, I would have watched them be really ridiculous.
Well, you never know. Remember, Machete got me into a movie.
Go make that movie.
Okay.
You're Gina, right now.
So, wow. But it is fun. It's not as good as Anchorman. It's better than Talladega Nights, and it's probably better than Step Brothers. But Ferrell needs it because he's had a bad streak, a patch of bad lately. And nice to see Michael Keaton doing comedy again because he's allowed to from time to time. So it's worth a rental, I think. Do you have the audio there, Kobe?
I sure do.
Were you Googling Eva Mendes?
Now that was a good movie.
Jim Ard.
See?
Yep.
Told you. Freckles, right?
Yep.
I know.
That's what it is.
And thank you for backing him up on that. Also on DVD and Blu-ray, a film that the AFI put this in their top 10. It's a good film. It's not a great film. The Ben Affleck crime caper, The Town, which he directed and stars in this time, and he plays a member of a band of thieves, and he starts to develop a relationship with a woman he captures and lets go, the bank teller.
Heist movie mixed in with a love story, and I liked it, but it wouldn't make it into my top 10
not
for the
top
year.
10. The film proved that Gone Baby Gone was not a fluke. Ben Affleck actually knows his way with a camera, and he knows how to direct actors. That's something that's often said about actors who turn into directors. Jeremy Renner's in this is really good. Not enough Blake Lively, right, Kobe? But you also have John Hamm, who has something more to do. He had something to do in this film compared to The Day the Earth Stood Still.
But one thing Ben Affleck is really apologetic for in the commentary for the film is how he didn't get to use Victor Garber very long at all. Like, he
that's
had
a
this
shame.
Whole other scene planned where he's going to give this great monologue, and he begged him to be in the film, and he was doing him a favor, and then he's like, oh, I had to cut the scene.
That happens. That's showbiz. And you know, it's funny. Obviously, Affleck gets a lot of clout in Boston. I mean, there's at times it feels like a Boston version of Heat. You have the two storylines with the John Hamm character and the Ben Affleck character and the things that they have to go through. But he gets into a lot of places. There's, without giving away too much, I mean, he gets into Fenway Park and gets really impressive.
Yeah.
So, but no, it's a well done crime drama. Not best picture material, although there's 10 nominees. I guess it has a shot. And for me, once you get past the whole acceptance of the male and female connection, the rest of the film is pretty smooth sailing. So, yeah, definitely worth renting.
Now that was a good movie!
A film that was actually a letdown for me because I actually had some hope for it, and this is what I get for having hopes about things, The A-Team. Because you have Liam Neeson, the new thinking man's action hero, and...
Yes.
Yeah, well, between Taken. You know, he's not...
Taken was a real thoughtful... Piece.
Would you have cared as much if it was Jean-Claude Van Damme or Seagal? No. But because you have somebody who can act and, you know, drive knitting needles through guys' legs, it's okay. But, you know.
He's the voice of God.
He's the voice of Aslan. That's
yes.
right.
Yeah.
That's right. He is that too. But yeah, it's a film version of the TV show that has trouble picking the right tone. And I thought, if you're going to be campy, just like the TV show, then go all the way that way. If you're going to be serious and try to do a Miami Vice transition, then do that too. But it didn't feel right having it both ways. You got Bradley Cooper's in this film as well. And I'm glad to see, despite the disappointing aspect of the film, Charlton Copley, a.k.a. the guy from District 9, plays Murdoch and plays him really well. And I'm happy that this guy was able to get into a big movie. Not the best, but he was one of the highlights of the film. So,
and if you watch till the end, you get an extra treat.
You do. So I'm hoping, you know, there's always that odd transition from making foreign films and trying to appear in big budget stuff. Hello, Audrey Tautou. I'm glad you're back in France. But Da Vinci Code was. So anyway, there's some silly action stuff, and by the way, the action scene is not nearly as silly enough to make my pantheon of ridiculous action films I loved. So not happening. It's a letdown.
Otter, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Despicable Me, you know, the one of two Villains as Hero films that came out this year. This is in Megamind.
And a group of adorable little girls and finger puppets.
And minions.
Minions.
Lots and lots of minions. Enjoy it? Did you like it?
I thought it was really cute. It kind of made it into fourth place for our animated best
feature
vote this year.
It did. So, also, Ed Johnson-Ott's top pick for best film of the year is out on DVD and Blu-ray, the documentary Exit Through the Gift Shop. Probably
yeah.
for him the top.
Probably kick us if we didn't mention it, so yes.
That's
please.
Why I mentioned it. But it is one of those, is it real, is it Memorex documentary? Actually, not just documentaries, feature films have been a lot of that, is what is real and what is not. But apparently this is the top of the lot compared to Catfish and I'm Still Here. Mother and Child, a film I enjoyed a great deal with Annette Bening, Naomi Watts, Samuel L. Jackson, not an action film. It's okay. You can do those from time to time.
That's okay. I'll still watch you.
It is. And Nanny McPhee returns, and my daughter wants to see it, and I don't.
I didn't watch that.
And that's quite okay. Oh, and on Blu-ray, the original 1969 True Grit. So you can watch John Wayne, who got an Oscar for it. And they did that, of course, because the remake of True Grit is opening next week.
Mm.
And guess what? The original True Grit, not the greatest film in the world.
No.
In fact, I still stand by Rooster Cogburn is a better film because he gets the balance off of Katharine Hepburn as opposed to Kim Darby and Glenn Campbell. So, but we'll talk about True Grit a little more as things get a little closer. Vince, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm tickled to be here.
You've been so patient and putting
I'm
up
sorry,
with all
I haven't seen
nonsense.
One of these.
You know what? You're not the first. You won't be the last.
Except
it's quite
True
okay.
Grit. I've seen the original.
The original True Grit? Yeah. It's just, I think in real life, John Wayne would have just backhanded her after 10 minutes.
I read an article where he basically said he really hated working with her.
See? It shows. And, of course, the great – and I remember the commentary on the DVD of True Grit. And there was a John Wayne historian and a Western historian. And as soon as Glenn Campbell came on, they both went, yeah, that's a Western haircut. So, yeah, that's fun. Vince, you have a new documentary.
Yes.
And tell us about it.
Well, it's called Take Two. It's about
It's not about Dave Brubeck.
No,
but it's about one of the all-time great duos in Indianapolis. Not just Indianapolis jazz, I think Indianapolis music.
Yeah, Claude Sifferlin and Frank Glover. They've been playing together for 25 years. It's really a film about a musical relationship and kind of how that had to come to an end because of Claude's illness. So there's a lot of stuff from the Chatterbox and the Jazz Kitchen and stuff about Indianapolis jazz in general. And I don't know, you saw it.
Yes, I did, actually. No, being a jazz fan, it was fun to watch the two of them. And we lost Claude, was it 2 years ago?
No, it was just in the spring.
Oh, the spring. Gosh, yeah. It feels longer, unfortunately.
But he's been suffering for, I guess, 4 years with cancer.
Right. And I would say, what drew you to the project?
Well, I actually started under a different producer named Ben Strout, and I was a cameraman at WFYI at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we started filming it, and then Ben actually, kind of tragically died about a year and a half ago, and the footage kind of sat for a while, and people from WFYI TV sort of approached me about finishing it. And so I did some new interviews and shot some new stuff and put the documentary together.
Well, I, because I got to see these guys play a few times, and it's a really cool story. It's kind of mentor, mentee, and then mm-hmm. as time goes on, it becomes equals. And then a scene that still kind of shaken me a bit was. And you were, obviously you were there, was the recording studio, the recording session. And
yeah.
they had to stop because Claude started to take a turn.
Yeah. Well, they were going in there to record, and it was going to be one of these things where it was like their last recording together because they knew Claude was sick. And, after about three songs, just really warming up, Claude had to stop and, take a break. And eventually he got so ill, they, called an ambulance in and had to take him to the emergency room. But he was okay from that. It was just, sort of because of some of the treatments he was in for cancer. But it was sad because he was so weak he couldn't even play, and they never were able to make that that album or make that recording.
How much footage did you use? Because the thing's about a little less than half an hour.
It's about, I'd say I've got about 25 or 30 hours of footage and had to cut it to 30 minutes.
Well, you have a box set, you know, ready.
Yeah, the DVD is going to be a little more expensive.
And how was interviewing Frank? I've had to interview Frank, and I know he doesn't do a whole lot of interviews.
It took a long time for Frank to warm up to me. It took him for a long time to agree to be interviewed again after Claude's passing. Mm. So like the stuff you see toward the end of the film where he's talking about it, that happened just about a week and a half ago.
Oh,
or I guess
okay.
About 2 weeks ago. I think he's a fascinating guy. He's just a really interesting character almost. You know, I mean, I look at him that way because I put a film together, but, you know, I think it's been an interesting life being a jazz musician in Indianapolis, someplace that isn't necessarily, you know, he's not going to get rich here.
Right.
But he stayed because of this relationship with Claude and a lot of relationships with the venues that have, you know, supported him.
And the cool thing is if you go to the Chatterbox, you can see an image of a mural, basically.
Yeah.
And the two of them are part of that wall now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Frank also, by the way, released an album earlier this year on Owl Studios, which I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best things I've heard this year by far. So, sorry, I cut you off.
No, Abacus is
yes.
The film or the documentary airs Thursday the 23rd at 7:30, and then you can go straight to the Chatterbox that night and hear Frank and his new partner play.
Is that Zach Lapidus?
Zach Lapidus, yeah, wonderful.
One of the APA finalists that I know that's coming up in the spring, and I got to talk to Zach, and it's a nice circle of music life, I guess.
That's kind of what the documentary is about. I mean, that's the structure of it, and I guess I don't know if I want to give away the ending at all, but
they're made from people. No,
exactly, but I mean, it's about Frank moving on, finding another musical outlet, another partner,
and a new position, so to speak. So cool. And so say it again. It's Thursday, and then
Thursday,
you're on Channel 20.
Channel 20, December 23rd, 7:30.
And then Chatterbox.
And then Chatterbox afterwards. They'll be playing until 11.
Kobe, we got to mark that down.
Okay.
All right.
And it is really, I mean, if you've never, you know, been to the Chatterbox and
what the hell's
experienced
wrong with you?
That... smoky, you know, small atmosphere. They're probably going to ban smoking, and then you won't have that anymore.
Yeah, but the Jamaican patties will still be there, so that's always a good thing. Okay, earlier this week, the Doughy White Guys and Gina, well, we had brunch at Mesh.
Representing,
you know. we had lunch at Mesh. Thank you to Mesh, and thank you to Lou Harry for setting this up. And we had our second annual, because we can say annual now, it's happened before, the Indiana Film Journalists Association's Best of the Year. So, no drum roll, let's just move on. Our pick for Best Film of the Year was Social Network.
Yay!
Guess who voted for? I'm the host, but I can't do it. Yay! with a runner-up, Inception. Woo. Best Animated Film, How to Train Your Dragon, with a runner-up of Toy Story 3. Best Foreign Language Film, Lebanon, winner.
Yay.
And the runner-up, Beautiful, the Javier Bardem film. Best Documentary, Exit Through the Gift Shop. Somewhere Ed is saying it should be Best Film of the Year. And the runner-up, The Tillman Story.
Because you didn't see Take Two yet and couldn't vote. Sorry.
That's true. Thank you. I know.
Sorry.
No. Hey, it's okay. Best Screenplay, Aaron Sorkin for The Social Network. Runner-up, Christopher Nolan for Inception.
Yay!
Bum, bum, bum. Best Director, Christopher Nolan for Inception. Runner-up, Deborah Cranick for Winter's Bone, who you'll hear on Fresh Air right after this show. You can hear it tonight. Best Actress, Natalie Portman for Black Swan. Runner-up, Jennifer Lawrence for Winter's Bone. Best Supporting Actress, Hailee Steinfeld in True Grit, which opens next week. Runner-up, Melissa Leo in The Fighter and her hair. Best Actor, James Franco for 127 Hours. Runner-up, Jesse Eisenberg for The Social Network. Best Supporting Actor, Christian Bale for The Fighter. Runner-up, John Hawkes for Winter's Bone. Our original Vision Award went to Inception with a runner-up for 127 Hours. And the Hoosier Award goes to Andy Redwine, the writer and producer of Paradise Recovered. So congratulations to everybody. And we got ours in early, so there.
Take that.
Take that, other critics who don't turn them in after we do. So there's that. Kobe.
We're setting it going.
We are setting it going. Kobe, you got it ready?
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
He worked really hard on this.
I think it's adorable.
It is adorable.
Sounded great.
Yeah. So I gave you three comedies to watch because apparently I've been hitting you too much with the heavy drama and blaxploitation.
I like funny stuff, and you made me watch Psycho, and I don't like scary things.
Oh, that's right. So, yes, I let you watch comedies.
You didn't think it was funny?
Sorry. Psycho's a riot, man. You must have not read into it properly.
It was a riot.
So, okay, so what'd you watch?
I watched The Hollywood Nights.
Very fun film.
Yeah,
one of the more underrated slob comedies of the post-Animal House late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Watched Woody Allen, Bananas.
Yeah, you need the early funny stuff. I'll hit you with Manhattan and Crimes and Misdemeanors much later.
And then...
What'd you think of Bananas?
Love Bananas. Love
very goofy, very silly.
And Dr. Strangelove.
One of the best dark comedies
ever
made.
Yes. Absolutely loved it.
Good.
Love Dr. Strangelove.
That's good, Dimitri.
How do you think I feel?
and you're going to watch Coffee.
We're going to watch Coffee tonight, yes.
Yeah.
The lovely Pam Grier and I will be spending an evening together. Enjoyed some...
with some low lighting.
And your growler.
Yep. That is absolutely, that's what's going to happen.
Okay, so, but of the three comedies, which one was your favorite?
I
know they're funny for different reasons.
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
Dr. Strangelove.
Dr. Strangelove, great stuff.
There's no fighting in the war room.
There is no fighting in the war room.
No fighting in the war room.
There is no fighting in the war room. So, and, you know, get ready to blast off. Just a great, great comedy. I said to Kobe, when, you know, the show gets the big money, and we get to fill the studio with movie stills. You know, the two that I want are The Four Guys in the Wild Bunch taking that walk, because that's just stone cold awesome. And, of course, Slim Pickens on the bomb. That's just a good way to end things. Speaking of ending things, we need to raise a glass for director Blake Edwards, who passed this past week, earlier this week. And going through his list, not a bad career to have. One of his early films was Operation Petticoat, which had the one and only teaming of Tony Curtis and Cary Grant. And we still don't know if he ever did the impression in front of Cary Grant. Thank you. Of course, he did most of the Pink Panther film. Well, the Pink Panther films that mattered and a few that didn't. The Great Race. With the teaming of Lemon and Curtis, and not nearly as funny, but still enjoyable, kind of strange. Experiment in Terror, which was the music I played earlier. We were playing music by Henry Mancini. There's also music by films directed by Blake Edwards. Let's see what else. Oh, SOB, which he did. He became an inspiration because, well, guys have been wanting their wives to do what Julie Andrews did in SOB for a long, long time, and he was able to pull that off. Victor Victoria, The Party, The Wild Rovers, I just mentioned Victor Victoria, Mickey and Maude, Fine Mess, Sunset, Blind Date, That's Life. Mickey and Maude, probably the last of his really good films, but very, very funny. And, of course, the Pink Panther films, the 70s ones, are always worth checking out. So salute to Blake Edwards. And now some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Gina, Vince, thank you so much for hanging out with me and
thanks
us.
Us.
So good to see
it.
Everybody. I know. We'll try again next week. Next week, Christmas Eve.
Who's going to be here?
Don't know yet.
We are.
You and I will. And anybody else willing and crazy enough to come to the building on Christmas Eve. So you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.